Fire away!
It's great that you're gay and you're proud and you like to swing your wang around and all that jazz.
Almost live from a very cool corner of Midtown Sacramento, it's the Nate Darling Show, featuring Mel Gelbart.
You're sexy and tattooed and delicious.
And Larry Mead.
Hey guys, that's awesome! Awesome, guys! Let's go! Awesome! Let's go get some new sneakers!
Now, from one end of his cheap IKEA couch,
I am a professionally trained radio DJ.
Here's Nate.
And I'm on vacation. Honestly, I am.
I miss you.
As you're hearing this, I am in the great state of Vermont, enjoying my family and a few friends, maybe a woodchuck or two.
Tapping trees for maple syrup.
You do that in the spring, Mel.
Whatever.
I might be looking at some foliage, stuff like that. But we're here for you with another episode of the Nate Darling Show. Coming up later on in the show, we have a whole section dedicated to the city of Portland, Oregon.
Yay?
Yeah. It's,
yay.
Wow.
It's for all of our listeners, but especially for our numero uno fan, at least our numero uno gay fan, Eric in Portland. So we'll have that coming up. But first, we are going to mark the 11th anniversary of 9/11. So I just thought I would start the show out really sort of quickly and go around and sort of talk about kind of where we are in terms of our feelings. Because, you know, the day was a huge, emotionally impactful day for all of us. And, you know, I think it's something that we should sort of take a minute to sit with our thoughts on what happened that day every year, just to sort of have a little bit of a reflection and kind of remember what happened and what's happened since. And it's interesting. And while I don't have anybody that I knew personally who was killed on that day, I still can't watch the footage. I can't.
Really?
No, I can't. I watched it that day until I couldn't watch it anymore. I saw it live. I saw people jumping out of high-rise windows to escape flames, knowing that they were going to just die when they hit the street. And I watched the first responders going in. I mean, it was all on TV. It all played out right, you know, in front of my eyes on TV. And I can't watch it. I can't go back and watch it again. And I don't know if I want to. I don't know when I will be able to, and I don't know if I want to. But we have captured, killed Osama bin Laden since then. That was a huge day. I think that would be the only time in my life I've ever been really excited that someone was killed. And I would hope that it's the only time that I'm ever going to feel that way. But, you know, actual excitement. Now, we've knocked off like five or six number twos in Al-Qaeda. But when he found out that they got Osama bin Laden, and the newsroom on HBO did an episode of that night, and that sort of brought it back around, that same feeling that I had when I found out. It was almost a feeling of closure for me anyway. And, you know, obviously I can't speak for anybody who was more closely affected by that, but it was just one of those things that I think we can't let the day pass without at least mentioning it. Larry, what are your sort of feelings about 9/11 11 years later?
Oh, Lordy. Oof. Oh, boy. So many thoughts. I don't know. Like, it really is just difficult to talk about because it really, there's just so many things. I think, what I think's weird is that talking to people, like, high school kids now really don't really remember it, but not really.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's weird. That sense of just panic and, like, you know, because right after, I think everyone thought we were going to go to war and stuff. And so it was just so crazy. And I don't know. It's still kind of difficult to talk about. It's just this very, it just evokes so many emotions.
Where were you living in 2001 when it happened?
I was in grad school in Ohio.
Okay.
And what was weird was, like, I remember waking up and watching the Today Show, and I thought they were showing footage of when, remember there was a previous bombing at the World Trade Center?
Yes.
I thought that's what we were going to do, and as you know, I have a lot of family in New York, and so it was just weird because people weren't able to call each other, and so it was actually, I think, about 2 days before everyone knew where everyone was. One of my cousins worked in World Trade Center 7, and so, you know, it was, I think, just the stories of people who were able to get away and just how New York resolved itself so quickly. It's just that part of the reason why New York is, I think, one of the best cities in the world, because they really did come together. Like, there was no, just how people were able to pull together, I thought was really, really impressive.
Mm-hmm.
There's a really cool documentary, if you haven't seen it, it's all about how all the boats along the river started making like a ferry system, just to help get people off Manhattan and taking them either to New Jersey or Staten Island or even down to Queens and stuff, and just how well people respond to that. Like, that's what I actually like to think about when, like, whenever that comes up, is just all those good stories.
Yeah, I remember seeing the images of everybody, like, walking back to Brooklyn,
mm-hmm.
over the Brooklyn Bridge and all of the bridges, just people walking out of Manhattan. It was very, very surreal. What about you, Mel?
You know, I think, for me, you know, I was in California when it happened, and I think there was that very feeling of being removed or distant from it. And, you know, it's funny because the emotion I have now is almost aggravation or anger, because I felt it was such a typically American, you guys are going to kill me for this, but I just felt like we dealt with it in such a typically American way, which is everybody pulled together in the immediate, and then within a few weeks, the flags were tattered, everybody forgot, and it was business as usual, and we didn't really do anything. I didn't feel like there was a real change, because that's typical of us. We just want to sort of be sweet and nice and help each other and deal with the problem. And I wanted to fight. I wanted to kill somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to make people pay. I wanted to be a superpower like we once were, because I feel like we're the pussies of the world right now. And we're always getting in everyone else's business, and we can't even take care of our own business. We can't take care of our own people. And once again, we sort of licked our wounds, hung flags for a few weeks, and then pretended like it didn't happen.
Well, to be fair, the president of the United States at the time, George W. Bush, did encourage people to go to the mall and go shopping. And his direction to the country was to go about your daily lives. That was exactly what the president told the American people to do. Go about your daily lives as if nothing happened, because if you don't, the terrorists win. That was the message that came from that.
I kind of feel like they won anyway. We didn't do anything.
Ultimately, I don't believe they did win, because they're pretty much all dead now. And I know the argument is, oh, there's going to be more. Well, we'll kill more. We're finally out of Iraq, which was a boondoggle, sideshow from what the real mission should have been. And what the real mission ended up being. And a lot of people died after that day that didn't really need to die. And that's incredibly unfortunate. And that's going to be on a lot of people's conscience for a long time.
I mean, I'm not like some backwoods, whatever, redneck person is like, just flatten everybody. But at the same time, I felt like, once again, we went in and tiptoed and tried to help and be involved and change things. I'm like, why aren't we just, we have the technology. Let's just go find these people. Why aren't we being aggressive? Why have we stopped being an aggressive country?
You know, I don't know the exact answer to that. I mean, other than when you're in a foreign country, you can't completely alienate the local people, or else everybody will be trying to blow you up. But a lot of it was there was this concentrated effort to sort of point the focus at Iraq when there was no evidence anywhere that Iraq had anything to do with it. And I think everything got sidetracked, and the hunting of bin Laden for a long time sort of took a back burner to whatever was going on with that. And, you know, a lot of people feel that way. I mean, and I'm not saying that the president of the United States at the time was doing something misleading, because I don't know the answer to that, but unfortunately that's kind of what it worked out to be. And George Bush never got Osama bin Laden. That was our current president, Barack Obama, who was in office and who ordered the SEAL raid to get him in Pakistan. So You know, I just think everybody should take a minute and think about it. And I wanted to bring it up. I wanted to bring it up off the top of the show because I want to have some fun today. I want to get through the rest of it. But I don't want to go past something as important as what happened on September 11th and just gloss past it and ignore it. And if you go to the airport, you're going to remember it because you're still doing things to this day that are because of that. I mean, Larry, you fly more than Mel and I combined. I mean, how many times have you walked barefoot through an airport since then?
Yeah, I mean, I get it, and I appreciate it, and we need to do it. I think everyone knows that. I don't know if that really... it's really not preventing anything. I think the problem is that Americans really aren't willing to compromise civil liberties in order to get the... If we really wanted to protect ourselves, I don't think Americans are willing to give up some of the freedoms that we have in order for that to really happen. And I, to be honest, I get really annoyed when I fly, when people go through security and A, make comments or get angry at people. One, because those people are doing their jobs, but then two, like, yeah, this is doing, like, it's doing something. And when people just get that angry, I think it's disrespectful. So, I don't know, like, it's frustrating, but I think that, you know, it's part of the deal. Like, in Israel, if you ever go to Israel and you fly LL, then you pretty much get subject to, like, body cavity searches. That's how strict they are. And so I think it's just one of those things people can get really angry by it. But it's, like, I don't know.
Do you feel
I've never
at all?
Found security. With one exception, I've never found security to be that annoying or frustrating.
Yeah, I don't mind it. But do you find, like, I find once again sort of the way it's done here, like, I don't feel like there's really any security. I don't know that I feel particularly safe. I go through with stuff I'm not supposed to have all the time that they never notice, but they always notice if I'm wearing a necklace and feel the need to touch my neck. But I always have stuff in my pocket.
You have a nice neck, though. I mean,
I do have a long, thin neck, but I always have stuff in my bag and in my pockets. They don't notice any of that stuff. I mean, half the airports around, they're so lame, they're so poorly trained, it's so typical, in my opinion. I'm feeling very anti-American today, apparently, that, you know, when I've traveled abroad, like, I really felt like they were actually looking for things that actually could blow up or be a nuisance. Here, I just feel like they're, like, hassling people over a water bottle.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is the way they
like
do
it. It
feels
going through the motions.
Well, and you have to remember...
Well, the problem that America has, and this is the thing... Whenever you engage in a conversation, no one ever wants to acknowledge. People are so against profiling. The problem is, even though TSA already engages in it, and some people know this, but like TSA has trained some agents to literally be profilers. All they do is stand around and observe. They're usually in green shirts. All they do is look for erratic behavior. It's called profiling. Like, it literally is what, if police did that, it would be illegal. But like, I think that because we value at least the idea that everyone should be treated equally, that's where those things happen, which I think is crazy, but I don't know what the, you know, result of it is. But
yeah, I think the answer is really, you have to say that the security zone at an airport is, that's where you sort of lose those civil liberties that we all love so much and just go, okay, we're going to profile here. And I remember in 2003 when I flew to L.A. for the first time, when I flew back from through LAX, and I checked my bags, and I remember the first time that my bags got swabbed down with this stuff, and I'm like, what is that? Is that going to, like, leave a mark on myself? And they're like, no, it'll just show if you have any sort of trace of explosives. And I'm like, oh, all right.
Yeah, more of that. I'm all for that.
Yeah.
I want to be safe. Really search for real stuff. Don't hassle people over ding-dong stuff. You're just going through the motions. I just feel like it's just such a waste of time.
Look, that bottle of Pepsi could blow up the plane, Mel.
I want to be safe. If you really think so, then do something that's really going to test my bottle of pop. But don't waste everybody's time. Really make us safe. Really find the bombs. Really do your job. Really be trained.
And I think for the most part... I think for the most part they have. I will give credit where credit is due. I think the TSA, considering that a lot of the TSA agents are really just a level above mall cop in terms of their education and training, that I think they're actually doing a pretty decent job for the most part, except for, allegedly, in Houston, where a gay couple has filed lawsuit this week against United Continental Airlines after accusing the airline of taping a sex toy to the outside of their luggage. The couple, Christopher Bridgman and Martin Borger, had a layover at George Bush Intercontinental Airport. Speaking of George Bush, different one, when traveling from Costa Rica, to their home in Norfolk, Virginia. Don't bring your sex toys. According to the civil lawsuit that was filed, it alleges that after going through customs, the couple rechecked their bags in Houston and then boarded the flight to Virginia. When picking up their bags at the carousel in Norfolk, the men discovered, quote, to their horror, that a private sex toy, as opposed to the public one, had been removed from one of their bags, covered in a greasy, foul-smelling substance, and taped prominently to the top of their bag.
Oh my God.
The lawsuit states that the couple experienced extreme shock and horror when seeing the bag, and when they saw the laughing and surprised faces of others in the baggage claim area, the men claim they had severe emotional trauma, which they allege has a significant impact on their daily lives and has required treatment from mental health professionals.
So I think it's funny that they say the airline did it. It wasn't the airline. It was some douchebag, douche nozzle working in the luggage area who should be fired, or him and his buddy should be fired. I don't think the airline did it or has a policy for doing such things.
No.
Policy 47-A.
Yeah.
When homosexuals fly, please tape sex toys on their luggage.
After smearing them with smelly goo.
Yeah, I mean, first of all,
I mean, yes, they're responsible with their employees, and yes, if they want to sue them, that's fine. I think it's weird that they're sort of blaming the airline as if this is their policy.
Well, they're blaming the airline because that's where the money is.
Right, I mean, exactly.
You're filing the civil suit because that's the whole thing, and your allegation is you've had
Jesse this... and luggage doesn't have any money. He's just working.
And I mean, seriously, and I know this is probably kind of traumatic at the moment, but do they run into these people that saw them picking up the dildo bag at the carousel every day? They see him at like Starbucks and go, hey, you're the guy with the dildo.
Well, I mean, I get it. It's embarrassing. Is it therapy-wise embarrassing? I don't know. I mean, who's to say who gets affected by what? But I do sort of roll my eyes and go, really?
See, my thought is if that's what's pushed you into deep psychotherapy, you were probably pretty much there anyway.
Right.
Although not a cool thing to do. Let me just for the record say not a cool thing to do. What is a cool thing, though, is what Toyota sponsored at Seattle's Bumper Shoot Music Festival this past weekend. The Toyota Prius Family Playground has been debuting a game at the music festivals around the country, and it's about what it sounds like. It's like whack-a-mole, but with hipsters.
I love, in a weird way, that all of a sudden being a hipster is no longer cool.
It really never was cool.
It was. I mean, I don't know that they call them hipsters, but that look was really the thing for a long time. And now all of a sudden, if you look cool, now you're a hipster, now you're uncool. It's very confusing. I don't know how to look.
So
I don't want to be rude, but I'm going to have to say goodbye.
All right, Larry. Take care.
Sorry.
Feel better. Bye.
He's going to poop.
He is. Larry joined us on the phone, both for last show and this show.
Like, how do you know if you're a hipster? Does my watch? I have a cool new watch. Does it make me a hipster? It's a cuff watch.
No, I don't think so. Well, there has to be an attitude to it. And like, I have a pair of shorts that people keep going, well, those are hipster shorts. I'm like, because they have a plaid pattern, they're not hipster shorts. I wear them with like a hockey t-shirt from a hockey team. So I think you have to make the effort.
You have to have your sunglasses on backwards and be douchey.
The whole thing about being a hipster is putting a lot of effort into looking like you don't put any effort in. So this is the press release.
I don't put any effort into not looking like I put in any effort.
There you go. The press release. Ever feel the urge to whack a hipster? This weekend at Bumper Shoot, the Toyota Prius Family Playground will offer folks a chance to live out their hipster whacking fantasies. Whether hoping to escape the heat, looking for an off-the-wall challenge, or searching for a place to recharge your phones, there's a little something for everyone at the Prius Family Playground.
Wow.
Way to get people out to your thing. I mean, that's awesome.
I want to know if like some of them are going to be on beach cruisers.
Beach cruisers, I don't know that are necessarily a hipster thing. Hipsters are more into the fixies, the fixed wheel bikes.
Oh.
Just the single gear, usually don't have brakes, just sort of plowing through it, never stopping for anything. That's really more of the hipster bike.
Maybe I just don't know what a hipster is. Maybe I'm just too out of touch.
Well, you do live in the suburbs, so.
That's true.
I mean, you need to spend some time around Midtown a little bit more.
See, I thought that the people on their cool beach cruisers that drove around thinking that they were awesome and go to all the bars were hipsters, but
some of them are.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. There's going to be some of them that are, but not all of them, because I know people that ride beach cruisers that aren't hipsters at all.
Well, and the douchebag college kids aren't hipsters per se, right?
Some of them are, and some of them aren't.
Oh, it's so confusing.
I know. It's hard. It really is. it's very, very difficult to sort out your hipsterness and what's going to be with what.
What am
where.
I? Do I have a category? I want to be in a category.
Old Jewish lady?
Aww, oy vey.
It's true. Now we go to Florida. this headline killed me. Cops, 346-pound Floridian punch pizza delivery man, quote, because he forgot the garlic knots.
I would too. Fuck that guy and his forgetting my knots. I need my knots.
Oh, boy.
Forget my shit. I'll kill you.
A Florida man is facing a criminal rap after allegedly punching a pizza delivery man in the face because he forgot the garlic knots.
Could you imagine? Like, that's like being hit by Andre the fucking Giant. He's a monster.
He's a big dude. Robert Wheeler, who's 48, was busted last week following the confrontation outside his Vero Beach home. The 346-pound Wheeler, who looks a little bit like an angry drunken Santa.
He reminds me if Papa Smurf and Lou Albano had a baby.
Good call.
Remember Captain Lou Albano?
I do.
So if him and Papa Smurf had a baby, that's this guy.
The late Captain Lou Albano.
Yeah.
The delivery man, Jonathan Fagan, told investigators that Wheeler struck him below the left eye after he rolled down the window of his vehicle. This 19-year-old added that Wheeler punched him because he forgot the garlic knots. The delivery man, who had slight redness and swelling below his left eye, declined medical attention. However, his mother later contacted deputies to say that she was taking her son to the hospital emergency room because he was complaining of headache and nausea.
I reiterate, the knots look delicious. I'm just saying.
the pictures are the ones they have there, sure. When questioned by deputies, Wheeler admitted punching him, but claimed that, quote, the issue was not over forgetting the missing garlic knots with the pizza, but rather that the pizza place owes him money.
What does that mean? How do they owe you money? How does a pizza place owe you money?
And how do you suppose
did
punching,
you deliver them a pizza?
And how do you suppose that punching the delivery guy is going to do that?
I don't think it's going to. I think that was a fruitless punching.
Unless it was one of those deals where he gave him like a 50 for the $15 pizza and he didn't give him enough change. I don't know.
Ran like hell from Papa Smurf.
I know this is going to be shocking. Wheeler, who is unemployed, was booked into the county jail and later released after posting $500 bond. Sheriff's records indicate Wheeler's tattoo inventory. This is the best part. He's got some tats. He's got some ink. He has a bunny.
Aww.
A reptile.
That's so generic. A reptile.
And a skeleton.
Sure.
He also has the word fat on his left arm. F-A-T, and the word boy on his right arm.
Well, he doesn't want to false advertise. Good for him. He owns it.
He has no intention of ever taking off the weight.
I guess not.
He won't be clicking through the DDP yoga to see what it can do for him.
Well, if he changes it, he'll have to, like, what's another word that has F-A-T in it?
Fatigued boy.
He'll be tired.
Also, you know, getting boy put on you anywhere is kind of weird when you're 48. I'm just saying.
Maybe when you're really big and roly-poly, you have to have that boyish thing or you're terrifying.
I don't know.
Maybe he's very childlike. He looks very childlike.
Well,
when he's not looking terrifying.
I cannot imagine this guy applying for a job and coming in for an interview. Like, well, have you ever been arrested? Yeah. What for? Punching a pizza guy.
Killing my mother.
I mean, unless you're applying for a job as a bouncer, and even then, if you're a bar owner, you don't want a bouncer who just punches people indiscriminately, because that means you're going to get sued.
And he just looks angry.
Well,
terrifying.
Well, they forgot the knots.
Oh, fuck them.
And they owe him money. And he's unemployed. So that's the trifecta of angry.
That'll make you cranky.
It will. It will indeed. All right, let's move on with this. It's time for the original segment on our show. It's time for...
Cool!
And Cooler Tool brought to you by DDP Yoga. Click through the banners on our website, natedarlingshow.com.
And you too can do yoga like Nate.
Yeah, yoga for dudes. Not chick yoga. Yoga for dudes. Pretty cool stuff.
Doga. Dude yoga.
Dude yoga. Yoga for regular guys. All right, so first up in Cooler Tool... let's start with this. Traveling with sex toys. Is that cool? Or is that a tool move to travel with sex toys, Mel?
Oh, that's tricky. I mean, I don't think it's cool necessarily. I don't think it makes you cool to travel with sex toys. So I feel like by default, I should say tool. I don't travel with sex toys. They're not that expensive. I guess I could pick up what I need when I get there. And Paul is my sex toy, I guess. So he goes with me.
There you go.
But you can also get very small sex toys when you're a girl, so they're, you know, they're hard to spot, whereas boy sex toys might be bigger.
I don't know if that's necessarily the case.
I don't know.
I don't know. Well, if it, obviously this one was big enough to be taped to the outside of a suitcase. And
I'm going
to
say tool for that, because just don't take it. You know. I mean, the chances are bad.
Well, the chances of it being caught up with in security somewhere are actually pretty good. And, you know, whether it's in checked baggage or whether it's in your carry-on, and somebody at the TSA or customs is holding up the giant dildo, waving it around.
Oh, God.
You know, you got to be like... I don't know. Did you bring it with you on vacation because you needed to vacation with your butt plug? You know, these are things that...
I just think it's safer to vacation without those things.
Oh, of course. It's absolutely safer to vacation without those things.
Hey, who's got a good butt plug? Let's try one out.
Yeah, sorry.
Not that I'm saying there's anything wrong with them.
No, not at all. But
almost anywhere you go, you can also pick something up if you need to.
Well, let us know when you go to Costa Rica if you can find sex toys there.
I will.
Because I need to know this.
I scoured China for a dirty magazine. Oh my gosh, impossible.
You know what's really weird about China is I've seen these documentaries about how 8,000-year-old sex toys have been found in places in China, but no porn.
No porn. You can't find porn. We did find a strip club, but no porn.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah, I don't know about the whole thing. First of all, it's tool to travel with sex toys. Leave them at home, for God's sake. If you are going with your significant other on vacation, leave your sex toys at home. I mean, is your sex life that unfulfilling that you can't be without them on vacation? Come on. I know it probably brings you to that next level and all, but just enjoy the rainforest and chill out.
Yeah, and get a cucumber or something at the buffet.
I don't know that would work for dudes, but I don't know. Up next in Cooler Tool, whacking hipsters. Mel?
As long as there's not like fakey ones that jump up that are maybe hipsters, maybe douchebag yuppies, because I wouldn't know what to whack, but otherwise the idea of whacking anything makes Mel happy.
I think it's hilarious. I think it was a brilliant move by Toyota and a talent. Seattle's not doesn't have as many hipsters as Portland, say, but there's still plenty of hipsters in Seattle, and to be able to go to a music festival and try and get families, especially, to come over to the Toyota family zone to see a Prius, I think it's really kind
it's of smart marketing.
It's very cool marketing, so thus cool. And finally in Cooler Tool, owning it by having a fat boy tattoo. I'll go first. It's so fucking tool. It is so tool. It's like, I'm horribly and morbidly obese, and I'm proud that I'm a giant train wreck. Look at me. Mel?
I have to agree with you, Nate, darling, but I'm not going to in this case. Normally, I agree with you. In this case, I'm going to say it's cool because he's owning it. It's hilarious. It's for my personal enjoyment, and the fact that it makes me laugh, and I want to call him Fat Boy so bad. I'm going to give him a cool for being a tool. How about that?
You know what's really funny is if you called him Fat Boy, he'd probably punch you.
I know. Because I have no garlic knots in my pockets.
It's one of those weird things that happens. So, anyway.
Hey, Fat Boy.
Hey, Fat Boy. This story also out of Florida amused me, so I thought I would share this. This is a Florida woman who claims to have mistakenly sent a photo of her private parts to men she was chatting with on the internet.
Say that again.
Okay, Florida woman claims she has mistakenly sent a photo of her private parts to men she was chatting with on the internet.
Do you know how many steps are involved with sending a picture of your private parts?
Not that many. You can do it in like 2 or 3 clicks.
Exactly. 2 or 3 accidental clicks. You have to take the picture of the hoo-hoo.
Right.
You got to upload the picture of the hoo-hoo or put the person's address into your phone, one or the other, right? Then you got to hit send.
Not necessarily. You can, if you're chatting with somebody online, you can drag a file into the chat box and it will go through. So if she was chatting with multiple people, she could have very easily accidentally, like, dragged
the wrong hoo-hoo for the wrong person?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God.
It's possible.
She's also grotesque.
She was arrested last week and charged with battery for allegedly assaulting her boyfriend after he discovered her online activities. Well, that makes sense. He found out she was sending pictures of her horrible crotch to people, and he got upset with that, and so she hit him, allegedly. According to the sheriff's office report, while Kizzy Campbell was away from home, Johnny Lowe came across some very provocative chat messages between his girlfriend and other dudes on their computer. That's,
I mean, she was sending someone a vagina.
Yeah. Vagina of the Month Club. It's the gift that keeps on giving the whole year. Checking more closely, Love discovered that Campbell had taken a photo of her vagina. Let me say that correctly. Vagina. I don't know why I called it vagina.
That's so gross. Who wants a picture of a vagina sent to them?
Guys do.
Ew, really?
Yes. Yes, we
Yuck.
Do. We do. Boobs, vagina.
Vaginas
butts.
Are icky.
No, no. Not to a straight dude, Mel. Anyway, so she took a picture and sent it out. When she returned home, Campbell started tripping because she hadn't meant to send out the photo. Lowe, the boyfriend, who told the sheriff's deputy they believed her claim that the image was sent out mistakenly, then gave Campbell a hug because, quote, he was simply trying to be understanding. But this empathetic gesture did not end her tripping, and she responded by biting, scratching, and cutting his arm with a kitchen knife. During the brawl that ensued, Lowe hit Campbell in the mouth. The pair, who have lived together for 7 years, were both charged with battery and taken to jail where they posed for mugshots. And
I just want to believe that whole he was giving her a hug because he's so understanding part is just him bullshitting the police. Because I don't think that's what happened.
I love that she's crying. She is crying. Like, you can see the tears streaming down her face.
It also looks like she's in a wind tunnel because her hair is going straight out to her right.
It is.
And she's like 300 pounds.
Yeah, she's about that, but he is as well. It's not like he's hot either.
Oh, he's no catch, yeah.
He's got some sort of weird golf shirt from the 80s on, and she's wearing one of his golf shirts, I guarantee that. And he's got that thing that a lot of black guys do where they tilt their head back and off to one side.
Head like, swagger.
You're like, yeah, take my picture. Okay, hold your number up. Yeah, take my picture. I'm
I
bad.
Love that they're really cute and old school because our number thing was way more fancier than that.
Yeah, well, it's Florida. They can't necessarily keep up. So, yeah.
Well, good for them. Many more happy years.
Yeah, well, anyway, I promised this at the beginning of the show. And it's time for our segment on the big hipster city of Portland.
Oh, my God.
Hi, Eric in Portland.
I hate to say that I hate that show, by the way, Portlandia.
You hate Portlandia?
I've tried to watch it so many times. Horrible.
Oh, that show is awesome.
I do not find it funny.
That is unfortunate, Mel, because it is an awesome show. I understand if it's not your thing.
Just not my thing, I guess.
Yeah, that's fine. So, yeah, we'll start out with story number one from Portland, and the headline is, just a bunch of dudes walking across the bridge wearing camo. It's a scene that practically defines the phrase, keep Portland weird. Portland police shut down the Burnside Bridge and detained 13 bearded men who said they were headed to a photo shoot to raise money for breast cancer research.
And how does a camo play in?
I don't know. The problem was the men were wearing camo and witnesses said one had a rifle.
Well, how does that play in at all? That's just irresponsible.
That sounds like another day in Montana.
Oh my God.
According to spokesman Robert King, police received a report that men on the bridge had an assault rifle. Officers shut down the bridge just after 7:30 p.m. while they investigated. They released a 911 call from a concerned person who first reported the men with the gun and camo gear. Quote, I saw two guys, white guys with beards, come out of a car with an assault rifle. That sounds like Portland.
It's more like they're going to shoot off boobs than support boobs.
Police soon found the bearded men, many of whom wore military-style uniforms. One of the men had an assault rifle, and they were taken to the central precinct. It's unclear if the assault rifle was even loaded, though. So, don't know. Several of the men told KATU News that they were on their way to take a photo under the Portland, Oregon sign near the Burnside Bridge to raise money for breast cancer research. The men said the photo was going to be part of a Beards for Breast Cancer calendar, which I've never heard of.
I have a friend that actually does mustache and beard stuff, and they are very active in all of that kind of stuff, oddly enough.
Okay. It's from Seattle, said Jedediah Acker. Wow, Jedediah Acker. That sounds like a bearded white guy.
Sure does.
This girl, Sugar June, does it. She puts together a calendar for all the beard clubs around the nation. Beards for breasts. Beard club sounds like something a little bit... I think if Larry were here, he would have a different take on what a beard club is. So I bet Eric in Portland has a different idea of what a beard club is, too. Apparently, two of the men were arrested and charged with disorderly conduct for handling the rifle. Police sent out pictures of the gear they seized from the men, including a military vest, a bandolier, a rifle.
That's just stupid. They're
a helmet
stupid.
And other camo gear. Yeah. Well, it's one thing to do it. It's another thing to march across the bridge. And there's like a traffic shot. There's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 cop cars.
Well, what the fuck
shutting
did
down
they
this
think?
Bridge.
It looks like the fucking white militia is coming to kill everyone.
Right. It's like Montana's invaded downtown Portland. they're coming across the bridge.
They thought no one would notice carrying an assault rifle.
Yeah, well.
I mean, maybe where I was a cop, no one would have noticed. But, you know, all the other cops in the world, I hope, are more astute than ours.
There is a sign that says, keep Portland weird. And they do mean it.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's...
We actually, funny, actually relating to that, we had during like college move-in or move-out day, and the, you know, we're all in force out on campus and out into the town.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy walked by one of the officers with a, and I'm doing air quotes, walking stick.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody, one of the other officers, realized and radioed to him, so we all heard, I believe that guy just walked by you with a shotgun. And he was like, oh, right.
Yeah, about that. All right, up next in Portland news, this is actually something that I thought was very cool. I found out about this about a month ago, and I've been meaning to talk about it on the show, but they weren't open yet, so I didn't. It's called the Oregon Public House, and the Oregon Public House is the nation's first nonprofit pub.
Ooh.
It is a nonprofit pub in Portland. It's 700 Northeast Deakum Street in Portland. And, they're a not-for-profit.
So how does that work?
Well, it's a different category of business. So what they do, it's like any other business, it's a not-for-profit. They apparently are taking, and I don't know exactly which charities they're supporting, but what they are doing is going to take their profits and put them back into the community.
That's awesome.
As opposed to pocket them.
Plus you get beer.
Yeah, they have an open house coming up on September 14th, which is in just a couple days from when this show is going to air at 7 p.m. They have live...
Eric, if you could do our man on the street on this one, that'd be great.
Yeah, Eric, I think you should go. They have live music, free beer and wine, a tour of the facility, and a small chat about the vision of the Oregon Public House. So I guess it's not quite open yet. But, it's here. Well, I'll share a little from an article that was written about them. It's in Portland's Northeast neighborhood. Damn internet keeps clicking through here. It's the first brew pub of its kind in the nation, bringing together three things that Portlanders are passionate about: brewing, charity, and the community. The public house will be donating all proceeds to local charity organizations. So, it's located below the Village Ballroom, another community-oriented space, and they're finishing up renovations, and they should be open soon. Their open house is on the 14th. So, Eric,
I love that.
Eric, go check that out and let us know what's going on with the Oregon Public House. So, so we have dumbasses in Portland, and then we've got cool stuff in Portland.
Yeah, I think that's a great fucking model.
I think it is, too. I mean, if there were a nonprofit pub that was halfway decent, I'd go to it. I mean, where are you going to throw your money? Towards something that actually does good in the community, or something that's just going to align another rich dude's pockets?
Exactly.
Finally, we go from dumbass in Portland to good in Portland to what the hell? Where, and this is going back a couple of weeks, a man passes out in dumpster, gets compacted. That's right. Man is recovering from minor injuries after a run-in with recycling. This story was just strange. Man who was too drunk to drive Friday, and this was a few weeks back, chose the wrong place to take a snooze after the recycling dumpster he was napping in was hauled away and compacted. Not once, but twice.
What are the fucking chances?
Lieutenant Robert King, who you remember from the other story, told KGW-TV that 27-year-old Justin Gilpatrick fell asleep in the dumpster sometime after 1 a.m., outside of Club 205, and that the waste management driver only discovered him in the truck after hearing him screaming near an area mall at about 2:45 a.m. Police said the driver called for an ambulance and the man was taken to an area hospital for treatment of minor injuries. I don't know how that happens, that, first of all, that you get dumped into a truck and you're not like, hey, but second, that you only get minor injuries. The Waste Management spokeswoman Jackie Lang said the driver did everything he could to help Kilpatrick.
That poor guy has got to be having nightmares.
Oh my God. He's got to be running around to the back of his truck before he hits the compact button every time, going, "Is anybody in there? Anybody in there?"
Oh my God. He's
walk
be
back.
Paranoid.
I think I heard somebody. Wait a minute. Is there anybody? Yeah, he gave him the initial treatment, and the driver had to convince this guy not to walk away and to actually get proper medical attention. Yeah. This guy just wanted to walk off.
He's probably still half drunk.
Oh, God, yeah. According to police, the hauler's compactor was empty, which allowed Kilpatrick to avoid serious injury or death. It was unclear if any charges would be filed against him or what his views on green initiatives are in wake of the close encounter with recycling. So,
does it really say that, or was that you?
No, that's right in there.
I thought that was just you being a smartass.
No. That's somebody from that's somebody who wrote the article for online. So yeah, that's our little segment on Portland, Oregon. So salute, Eric, in Portland. Enjoy your town.
I feel so much more Portland fulfilled.
Yeah, Portland is. You know, we wanted to do this and it didn't work out because Larry went to London. Jerk. I still would love someday to get up to see a Portland Timbers game and see the guy sawing off the block of wood when the Timbers score a goal, and just the whole atmosphere, because I've seen it on TV and it's absolutely nuts on TV. So I can only imagine what it would be like to actually be there when it's happening.
I just want Eric to spend like 2 days taking me all over Portland gay style.
I don't know if I would say the same thing.
I do.
I don't know that I want to be taken gay style anywhere.
Because the gays do it right.
Well,
don't you, Eric?
It would be a little bit different to take you gay style than to take me gay style.
Oh, you'd love it. And they'd love you. Holy shitballs. You're like a little cuddly cub.
Oh, well, not for long. I'm doing DDP yoga. Haven't you heard?
We better get up there quick.
or I better wait until I get a little bit more live. How's that for a word?
Then the gays won't want you.
Well, it'll be a different group of gays that want me.
That's true.
They all want me. I know it. I can feel it. That's why I keep an eye on them. Speaking of keeping an eye on things, this is a downtown Sacramento story or midtown story. I was in my car and I was headed over to check out the sidewalk sale that was at Fleet Feet Sports a few weeks ago, and I'm at the corner of 19th and J Street, and I'm at the light, and I look over, and there's this hobo, and he's sitting on, you know, they've got it's not a seat, but it's like, so he's sitting on something there, like a planter or something.
Okay.
Outside of the Starbucks, like right on the corner, and he's about 8 to 10 feet from my car, and it's noon, so it's noon somewhere. And he is taking drags off a fifth of either vodka or gin.
Good for him.
Whatever clear... Oh, yes, good for him, because he really needs to... That's what he needs to do to straighten his life out. Get drunk right at noon.
He was just stressed out that day.
Yeah, he wasn't pouring it into coffee. He wasn't, like, cutting it with something else. He's just got a fifth. And it wasn't like it was in a bag or anything. It was just out there. He's just hanging out. And for anybody who isn't from Sacramento, that's... J Street is a very large street. It's the main artery going west to east from downtown to midtown. If you come into Sacramento, the J Street exit off of I-5 is like the big exit. And
well, he's probably hoping he could get a drink real fast and then get picked up by the police and get a shower and a meal at the jail and then get released by like evening when it was cool out.
Oh, could be. It wasn't that hot that day, but it was just one of those weird things that I'm like, you know, I know that a good portion of the homeless population is made up of heavy drinkers and drug abusers. I know I've been behind them at 8:30 in the morning as they're buying malt liquor.
I remember.
But it was still weird to see a dude at noon, and he was wearing like a heavy jacket too, and it was like 85 degrees at that point, so he was wearing way too many clothes, and he's just sitting there slugging away on his alcohol. I was like, wow.
Yeah. What do you do? What do you do with that?
Yeah, what do you do with that? And if you're the people working at Starbucks, you're like, do you call somebody and go, hey, there's a guy drinking outside on the sidewalk?
The worst was when I used to work in mental health and I'd go into that Starbucks all the time. And my clients would come in and they'd want to tell them to leave, but they'd come over and be like, I know her.
Oh.
And then they'd be like, let me get a free cup of coffee. And then I'd be like,
oh.
So then I'd have to buy them like a coffee to get them out of the Starbucks because I felt so bad they wouldn't leave as long as I was there. And then I'd have to leave. It always caused a commotion.
Did you ever get banned from there?
No, but I could tell they hated me.
I would have banned you. I would have said, I'm sorry, ma'am. You bring in the wrong element.
I know. I was like,
get out.
I was a homeless magnet. It was
You're going to have to hit one of the 18 other Starbucks in a 1 mile radius of where we are now.
I know. I was like the social worker do-gooder of Midtown. They all knew me.
Ma'am, I'm going to need you to take your business over to Pete's.
Pete's didn't like me either.
You're going to need to take your business over to Pete's. They're a block over that way and across the street.
Because they used to do AA meetings. I used to drop off and pick my clients up too at Pete's. So I was always there with homeless people too.
Good Lord.
I know.
If you bring them here, I'm going to be very cross with you.
If my homeless show up here, it'll be hilarious.
Oh yeah, it'll be great. It'll be absolutely it'll be phenomenal. All right, Mel, we've reached the end of another slightly abbreviated show.
I don't want to go home. I'm staying. I'm going to keep talking. You better keep recording me.
You're going to stay while I'm on vacation too? Just
yes,
going to hang out
I'm
here?
I'm going to hang out with the cats and I'm going to record the Mel's Lady Bits show.
The Mel's Diner show.
The Mel's Diner show.
All you like.
I'm going to talk about my vagina for an hour.
You missed that one. Mel's Diner, eat out all you like.
I got it.
Sorry. It's
open 24/7.
It is. It's, yeah. You had a little on you.
Oh, God.
So this time, it's time for Small Town News.
Already?
Yeah.
I'm not ready to go home.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to whine.
I'm sorry. Is it because Paul's still in Toronto?
Paul is still in Toronto.
Maybe he'll bring you back some nice Canadian sex toys.
Yay.
Taped to the outside of his luggage.
I want to get him a present for when he comes home, but I don't know what to get.
Oh, we can talk about that after.
Yeah,
we'll absolutely have it.
But in the meantime, fine. I'll give it to you. I know what you want, and I've got it.
Yes.
Small Town News. Everybody loves that Small Town News.
And Small Town News brought to us by the Amazon page at NateDarlingShow.com. Please, if you're going to shop Amazon, shop through us, NateDarlingShow.com. Doesn't cost you any extra, and it helps the show out. We really do appreciate it a great deal. Now, for Small Town News, because we're recording two shows and 1 week because I get vacation too. Damn it. I don't have a Roger Peon update, at least not right now, but what I do have is an opinion piece from across the lake from the town I went to college in, Plattsburgh, New York, from local legend Gordy Little, who used to be on WIRY.
A piece WIRY?
Yes, Wiry Radio. The title is Bells Heard Less These Days. What's blue and goes ding-dong? Answer, an Avon lady at the North Pole. What's the kind of joke you hear from your kids? What do you get when you cross a church bell with a bumblebee? The answer, a humdinger. So much for the juvenile humor. My friend Les Bradford and I got to talking recently about bells. Must have been exciting. Jesus.
I'm already half asleep.
When we were young, there were bells everywhere. Not so much these days. We have the handheld bell my wife Kay's mother used to call her students in to her one-room school. I saw the old dinner bell on the top of the house when I was doing a recent farm interview in Champlain. When it was time for a fire drill at our schools, a loud bell rang and we reacted instantly. Nowadays, you might hear a totally different kind of alert sound. Les said he was shopping and suddenly heard a buzzing sound filled the air. He asked the clerk what it was. Oh, that's just the fire alarm, she said, shrugging her shoulders. We get them all the time. We just don't pay any attention to it. I love that, too.
What the hell?
Yeah. Where I work, no one pays it. No one ever moves when there's a fire alarm, except I always do because the room that I work in is an interior room. So I'm like, you know, on the off chance that something is on fire, I'm not going to get trapped here because I can't take 5 seconds to step out. So he's a safety nut and always makes sure the emergency exits are well marked and accessible. He once asked the desk clerk at a hotel what the fire alarm sounded like in case it went off during the night. I have no idea, answered the man, but you'll know it when you hear it. My guess is it'll be the thing making a lot of noise in the middle of the night.
Why did somebody write an article about this?
Small town news, man.
I want to write him an article about his article.
We have heard fire alarms in hotels and motels. We have rushed outside only to look back and see families gawking out their windows to watch the fire trucks approach. That happened to Kay and me at a multi-story motel in another state. Let's say there were 300 guests that night. When the loud buzzer sounded, we rushed outside and waited. Only about 10 others joined us in the parking lot. We were aghast to see people hanging out on the top floor windows, hoping to see something exciting. Indeed, one young man in our group hollered up to the woman in the window, "Okay, lady, you can jump now."
Oh my God.
Humor. Bells were once kind of a universal alert sound. Fire bells, school bells, doorbells, church bells, nautical bells, railroad bells, telephone bells. They all have their place in our memories.
This guy's like the Forrest Gump of bells, or the Bubba Gump of bells.
But that has changed. Cell phones rarely ring anymore. They play songs. We moved into our house. The heavy wooden front door had a built-in metal handle that you turned from the outside. It caused a large bell to ring on the inside of the door that could be heard anywhere in the building. My 18th century grandfather clock has a 5-inch bell, and when it sounds the hour, you know what time it is in any of our 6 bedrooms. That must be delightful. Kay and I have enjoyed the U.S. and foreign church bells in many places. I've never heard Big Ben in person, but I'd love to. It weighs 13 tons. The Mingan bell in Burma is said to be the biggest ringing bell in the world, weighing...
Oh my God, I'm going to kill myself if you don't stop.
90.5 metric tons, or almost 200,000 pounds. The next largest is the Great Bell of Kyoto in Japan at 74 tons. Then there's this Savoyard in Paris. You know that one.
I hate you so much right now.
Of course you do. Which is said to
produce... I hate the bell man more.
A gong 9 minutes in duration that can be heard 30 miles away.
Whoop-dee-fucking-doo.
The most famous for me is, of course, the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia because of its cracks. It hasn't been rung since 1846. One of my most poignant childhood memories is my Protestant preacher father describing the famous 19th century painting The Angelus. He explained that the man and woman working in the field are pausing to say 3 Hail Marys while the evening Angelus bell sounds on the Catholic Church. My friend Jack Glasgow recalls being on the Cornell campus on November 23rd, 1963, when 21 bells in the famous McGraw Tower tolled for the JFK on the day of his assassination. How many songs about bells can you remember?
Jesus Christ.
The Three Bells by the Browns is one of my favorites. I've been called a ding-a-ling, a dingbat, a ding-dong, and even a dingus. But if you ring a dinner bell, I'll be come running.
Jesus, I'm going to kill myself.
Be a bellwether like the sheep with a bell around its neck who leads the flock. Have a fine holiday. This was written for Memorial Day. And please, drive safely.
I hate him.
So that's...
I hate him and I hate you for doing that to me because that was so small town news. That wasn't even news. That was small town bells.
That's the whole idea. It wasn't news. It was an opinion piece.
Jesus.
About bells. Not really a fucking opinion. Just like, hey, I don't hear bells anymore. You know what? You probably don't hear them because you're deaf. Because Gordy Little is old now. Anyway, and then, of course, they have to explain at the end that Gordy Little was, for many years, a well-known radio personality in the North Country and now hosts the Our Little Corner television program for the hometown cable.
And at the beginning of it, it always goes, bong, bong, bong.
That's public access, by the way. Anyone with comments for him may send them to the newspaper or email him. Here's, write this down, Mel. GordandK@AOL.com. He still has an AOL email address. Isn't that precious? That is precious. And that's small town news. I'm sorry. I came across that and I'm like, wow, is there anything that could possibly signify small town news more than someone writing an incredibly long and tedious soliloquy, if you will, to bells, you know?
Horrible.
It is.
Now, this is a good bell.
It's terrible. Here's a song about bells that I'm sure he doesn't. Although, I have listened to the station that he used to work at, and they would go from, like, a 1950s song right into something like this.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They played everything. They're crazy. If you want to check them out, if you're really in for some punishment of your eardrums and your brain, it's at WIRY.com. You can listen to them live. I guarantee you won't last more than 10 minutes, but you can try it. Maybe you'll end up tuning in during their Trading Post program. I think it's called Swap Shop.
Horrible.
Where it's sort of like Craigslist for the radio, where you call in and go, yeah, I've got an old bicycle for sale. It's missing.
Oh my God, no!
It's missing a front wheel. Asking $25 a best offer. You can call me. It's Nate at 555 bike.
That's horrid.
Oh yeah. It's an hour long every day of people calling in with their stuff.
That's horrid. That's the most horrible thing ever.
It is. So, and that's Small Town News. It's going to wrap up another episode of The Nate Darling Show. Here's hoping Larry's diarrhea is cleared up these many weeks after he first contracted it.
We're praying for your butthole.
Mm-hmm. I'm praying for his entire digestive tract, Mel, because that's just the kind of fella I am. Eric in Portland, I hope you enjoyed our tribute to your fair city. We'll see you next time on the Nate Darling Show. Bye-bye. Bye. Yeah.